welcome to Coffee First, the podcast about leaders and leadership. In each episode, we invite you to listen to a unique conversation about an individual's journey to understand what leadership is and how they have built their businesses around those learnings. We ask each guest to share those experiences and provide us with some reflections to put into practice ourselves. I'm your host, Adam Saunders, Managing Partner in the UK office and Global Board Member of AMROP, the executive search partnership shaping sustainable success through inspiring leaders. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Hazel Harrison. Hazel set up Think Avalana with a mission to bring psychology out of clinics and into the workplace and schools. Hazel develops and delivers keynotes and workshops on a broad range of well-being topics, harnessing her long-held belief that prevention is better than cure. This episode was recorded originally as a live webinar during Mental Health Awareness Week to provide insights and useful takeaways as we continue to deal with working from home during lockdown. I've had the privilege of speaking with Hazel a number of times prior to this discussion and felt that this would be a fantastic way to kick off the Coffee First series. We invited a broad range of guests to attend the webinar and listen to Hazel talk about her work with leaders in businesses of all sizes.
Okay, so let me start with this, because on your website, you have a really great quote. I absolutely loved it. And it changed my perspective on this whole topic. So you say, in the same way that we have physical health, we also have mental health. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I found that really profoundly sort of game changing in my mind.
Yeah, so I think one of the things that has happened over the last few years has been perhaps a bit of a shift for us all in starting to become a bit more aware of what mental health and well-being really means. And I hope we get to the place where we just say we all have health. And in saying that, we understand that we have physical and mental health and that they are intrinsically linked as well. But I think at the moment we're in this sort of shifting place where people are starting to understand a bit more about the sort of necessity of taking care of our mental health in the same way that we would our physical health. And I think that for some people is still a sort of fairly new idea. If you think about campaigns like, you know, the NHS is sort of five fruit and vegetables a day type campaign, to understand that those were the things we needed to do to take care of our physical health, we needed to eat well. And I think we're now moving to a place where we're starting to see some of that existing in terms of our mental health too. And I think we will hopefully get to a place where we just talk about health and we understand that all of these things, eating well, sleeping well, exercising, and then some of the things that we'll be talking about today will all impact on our health, you know, physical and mental.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's fair to say that really we're just opening our eyes to this, or at least most people are really just opening up their eyes to how important this is and shifting their perspective on it. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think what we're also starting to understand is just like our physical health, we will move up and down a sort of spectrum of mental health too, depending on our life circumstances, depending on aspects of our genetics, a whole range of things. So it's not like we get to sort of say this in the same way with our physical fitness, right? We don't get to go, right, we're here on this line and we'll stay there. We know we have to work hard to keep ourselves in that place, wherever it might be, or to try and improve our fitness levels. We maybe have to work even harder. And the same is true for our mental health. We will move up and down a spectrum depending on all sorts of things that will happen. And I hope that we can share some ideas today about what can help us to perhaps move ourselves along that spectrum a little bit.
Okay, awesome. Well, let's get straight into it then. I'd like to start really big with a nice big open question. So why does it matter?
I suppose for so many reasons. Like, we're saying, why does my job matter? From a clinical psychology perspective, it matters because it's so much about what makes us human and what makes us thrive and flourish and be able to live fulfilling lives. And taking care of our mental health and our well-being is such a, you know, crucial aspect of that. But I suppose, you know, I know lots of your clients will be in various different businesses and be thinking about this with perhaps not just a kind of individual hat on, but why does it matter for teams or for their organization? And in that way, you know, what we understand is that some of the research would suggest if you have people in your organizations with high levels of well-being, they're more likely to be kind of more productive, more engaged in the tasks that they're doing at work, have stronger kind of positive relationships with others, all the things that I guess we would be looking for in terms of developing, you know, a high functioning team.
So maybe it'd be interesting to know, you know, what does good look like in terms of well-being practices in businesses typically? I know you deal with, you know, a broad range of them from FTSE 100s right down to SMEs and charities and schools. So in business, what does good practice look like in this space?
So sometimes when I go into work with businesses, they will say to me, well, we do loads to do with well-being. And I get really excited and I say, that's great. I say, what sort of things do you do? And they say things like, we have a well-being week and we let people, you know, get massages, and we have yoga teachers come in and we do a little session on mindfulness, and so everyone's allowed to go to a spa for the afternoon. Now that is brilliant. That sounds like a great week for me, but that is not the well-being that I'm talking about, because those things that happen perhaps once a year, maybe in Mental Health Awareness Week, are not the things that are going to enable us to thrive and function well throughout the whole year. So really, for me, when I'm looking at what does good look like in business, it's probably smaller things, but things that happen every day rather than sort of just blitzing it, you know, in a massive way. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with those amazing well-being weeks. I'm sure that there's a tremendous amount of benefit that can come from that. And maybe some of the things that come from that then get integrated into how the, you know, organization functions the rest of the year. Perhaps people loved the session that they had on mindfulness, and maybe people come back and do more of those things. But I do think it's important that it's sometimes about small steps, but just doing it regularly. Like anything that we want to learn, it's often better to do it in sort of small bite-sized chunks on a daily basis rather than just, you know. And as, if we go back to this analogy about physical health, you can't just go to the gym for 1 week of the year and then go, yep, I'm fit. Yeah. Right? You have to keep going, you have to keep working at it. And the same is true for how we take care of our well-being.
And that's really interesting, right? Because it's not just about what you add to improve yourself. It's also what you don't do to make it worse, right? And we talked about this before. I know I said to you, people know now that it is not a good idea to smoke 20 cigarettes a day, eat fry-ups daily, and go and have a couple of pints down the pub every single day, right? You know, we know that, but we don't have a similar sort of feeling perhaps about the mental side of that, you know, our well-being side of that. And that's kind of the same thing, isn't it? We're moving the needle a bit.
Yeah, so that's what we're where I'd love to get to. I'd love to get to a place where we can all sort of confidently say what the mental health and well-being equivalent of the sort of smoking and having fry-ups every day, and, you know, what those things are. And the challenge is that they'll look a little bit different and for everyone, but there may be some common similarities. So one example might be, we understand that there are some very common thinking traps that we can all fall into. And by that, I mean, maybe we start to catastrophize about something, or we shift into a place where we see things as very black and white, and we're not able to see the gray area, or we sort of do a mind reading trick where we sort of feel like we know what's going to happen, but we haven't really looked at the evidence to decide, is this true? Or is this just my brain playing tricks on me? And, you know, one very simple thing that I tell kids when I go into schools and we talk about this is that sometimes your brain tells lies. And I think it's helpful for us as adults to remember that too. The things that we think aren't always factual, and sometimes they will be influenced by a whole range of things, so that actually we're not necessarily being driven by kind of fact. And so one equivalent to what you're talking about in terms of physical health might be, how do we learn some really helpful thinking strategies that enable us to notice when we're falling into a kind of catastrophizing cycle that won't be good for us and won't be good for the people around us? And what are the very simple things we can do to pull ourselves out of that? And when we start to practice that on a daily basis, then we can train our brains to do something different.
All right, good. So we want to talk about businesses and business in general. So where does good well-being come from in a business context? You know, where does this begin? Who's responsible?
In a way, I kind of want to cop out and say everyone. Like, it's got to come from everyone. But I also do think there is an element of it needing to be modeled and needing to be shared by those people within an organization that I would describe as powerful. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's the people who are at the top in terms of the kind of hierarchy, but I think it's those who are influential that are respected by others. And when you start getting those people to be more open to some of these ideas, perhaps sharing some of their own thoughts around it, you can kind of start to ripple a different conversation through the organization about mental health and well-being. So I think in some ways it comes from those who can be influential and brave, because sometimes it is about being a bit vulnerable and having to talk about things that maybe we don't tend to do in an organizational, you know, environment. So I think it needs to be modeled and it needs to become something that's okay to explore in order to get people really thriving and flourishing in their work.
Yeah, which is good. And that gives me hope, because I think just on the physical health side of things, it has become much more acceptable, hasn't it, to take time out to exercise. We know that it's not just a recreational thing. It has real benefits. It makes people perform better and feel better. And so, you know, that gives me hope, because those things have changed. Those attitudes have changed. Okay, so maybe we should contextualize it, address the elephant in the room. Why is well-being important now? In the current environment, what sort of heightened emotions may be at play?
So I think, as a psychologist, why well-being is important now is because we know that the pandemic will have challenged a lot of the things that potentially we took for granted or were just part of our day that actually were sustaining our well-being. For example, you know, you may have had a lot of different connections, perhaps some positive interactions with different people as you move around the office, and some of those don't happen anymore, or maybe happen in a different way. So for some people, you know, in England, we're still in lockdown. So we, you know, we're allowed to go out and exercise a bit more, but we're not allowed to go out and socialize with lots of people yet. And we're and some people are starting to move back into their offices, but, you know, that's looking different as well. So I think for some people, there will be an experience of a lot of loss right now, loss of connection to others, possibly a loss of meaning and purpose in your day. Perhaps your role has changed so much that it doesn't feel like you're working in the same way that you were before, or able to do the same sorts of jobs that you were doing before. A loss of achievement too. You know, actually, maybe the high that you get, that boost, that feeling that you're working towards a goal, maybe with your team, or some of those things may have been taken away too. And that's just within the business context. And then we can start to think about, there are other losses too that people will be experiencing right now, and a whole sort of spectrum of those, and therefore our well-being will be quite challenged, and we will need to think carefully about how we sustain ourselves during this time. And also, as you mentioned, it's quite stressful for many people. They will be experiencing a heightened degree of anxiety right now, which is very normal. And I think that's really important to say. It would be unusual for us, I guess, if we weren't feeling some degree of anxiety, because there is a threat. And we've evolved to respond to a threat with, you know, a kind of stress response. So there's a lot in play. And I think there's a lot of mental health aspects to think about in terms of how we successfully navigate this challenging time.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. You mentioned three things that I want to talk about, and I have to try to think about which one is important. So I think there will be a number of people who will listen to this who may not feel that level of anxiety that you just mentioned. They may not be as worried. Now, that could be because they are in different countries, they're part of global businesses, and their experience day to day is different to another's. And that in itself is something we'll come on and talk about. But just because they feel like that, it doesn't mean to say that others may not be at that same point yet. And so my question to you is, you use the word loss a lot then when you talked about that. And that's a big word. That's usually associated with, you know, bereavement or something like that. And I know that you shared some material with me, you know, some sort of well-documented material about loss and grieving. And there are some similarities here, aren't there? Could you maybe mention a little bit about those discussions we had?
Yeah, and I think some people might feel like, well, I've not really lost anything. I, you know, like you said, perhaps they have a sort of a sense, like we may, like you're alluding to too, that, well, really the loss is about losing a person or grieving for someone. And for some people listening, that may be the case. There are a lot of people that have lost a loved one through this pandemic. But I think there are smaller losses too that deserve to be acknowledged. And that isn't to say that we're taking away from the massive grief losses, but that we will have all experienced some element of our lives changing, or perhaps not, or many of us will. I guess there are some people, perhaps, like you said, that their lives haven't changed a great deal. But for many of us, there will be smaller things that we're not able to do. And it's useful sometimes to just think about those and to give those a bit of time too, because otherwise they can kind of seep out in unexpected ways when we're not expecting it. And I when we start to think about this in terms of the things that we've lost, which might seem a bit of a pessimistic view in some ways, and we will talk about potentially the things that we've gained too, but we can apply some of the sort of psychological theories to help us to make sense of the process of moving through this and moving to a place where we are able to find a sense of meaning perhaps from some of the things that have happened. I know that some people might use this time to clarify the things that really do matter, because you realize what you're missing that you really want to get back in your life, or you realize things that you don't miss at all, then you decide you're not going to put those back at all. So, you know, there is sort of psychological theories that can help us understand the processes that we might move through, the experience, emotional experiences that we might have, that can help us, I guess, to come to terms with some of the changes that have happened. And often they will not be linear. So, you know, we may experience a sense of denial one day and then a sense of sort of acceptance another day. And then we may well go back to denial again. And, you know, and that's okay, mm-hmm. because that's just how we're moving through this, to try and make sense of it.
And I guess the complexity of it all is that people move through those cycles at different speeds and backwards and forwards in different ways. And that can create friction, can't it?
It can, because I think it's very, sometimes we can get kind of caught where we are and feeling like, right, I've found my sense of meaning now. I know why, what matters to me. Moving along, people, you know, when someone else is perhaps not in that place at all and is actually still just trying to get through the day and make sense of what's happening, or struggling in a different way. And I suppose that comes back to one of the cores about what helps us to build our well-being and what helps us to function well with each other, which is being able to put yourself in someone else's shoes, you know, empathy, and understand that their experience will be very different from your own, and that that's okay. That's what makes us beautifully human. And we can perhaps then let go of some of the judgments that we might want to put on other people's experiences. And I know, you know, this was the fascinating thing that I found in exploring some of that grief literature, was this idea that when we judge other people, it can also come with some sense of punishment. And when we just accept that their experience is their experience, then enable us to perhaps think together about moving forward, rather than it feeling punishment, which can bring about shame and, you know, perhaps perpetuate some of the negative emotions that aren't very helpful for our well-being.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there's only one loss for the majority of people, at least certainly the majority of people that we talk to on a daily basis, is the office environment, the work environment. That's gone for a lot of people, or at least it is for the time being. And that, I think that obviously has been a bit of a bumpy ride for a lot of people. What's interesting, of course, is, you know, having maybe adjusted to working from home, having played with the technology, changed our communication habits and all that sort of thing, we now find ourselves in a situation where we have perhaps some optionality about going back to the office. And I think this poses a lot of issues for leadership teams and team members for a number of reasons. So can we talk about that topic for a little bit? I'd really like to sort of delve into that, because I know you have some interesting thoughts about that. So let's deal with the fact that when you're in the office, you're with your colleagues, it's a fairly fairly solid set of people, every day, not too much flux. You've used this word tribe, at home. Could you talk to us a little bit about what that means, this kind of extended group of people now that are kind of part of the office or the everyday office?
Yeah, so I suppose one of the things that perhaps has happened for some people is that we've changed how we're working. And like you said, you might have your office tribe and then you leave your office tribe and you go back to your home tribe. And you have different roles and different ways of being in those two different places. And you probably have maybe your, pub tribe too, or a variety of other tribes that you may kind of associate with. And it's important that we have these. And I use the word tribe because I think it's such a great, for me, it conjures up this sense of belonging and feeling that you belong and feeling that you can perhaps, be a particular person within that set of other people, and that they know who you are and you know who they are and you know where your role is. I think one of the challenges for us now has been that our tribes have become a bit blurry and a little bit extended. And we were chatting yesterday towards the end of the day, and I think did I have like two or three small people popping up throughout the conversation because they wanted to ask something and they needed something. And we are having to be much more flexible, I guess, in the way that we work because of how things are in the UK and us still all being at home, and my children are not at school. So there needs to be much more adaptability. And that can come with some real benefits, because perhaps there's more time with your family or you've got less commuting time. But I think it also can present some real challenges in terms of our boundaries and how we work and our well-being, when maybe we're just not used to doing this yet and we haven't found the way to define what those boundaries are. And it can perhaps increase some stress and anxiety when you're trying to juggle the many different tribes and the roles you have in those different tribes at the same time. The time boundaries aren't as clear either.
Yeah, and nobody is free of this, are they? We talked about right the way from, I guess, perhaps grads who have had to move back home. They're kind of living with their parents again. They've just flown the nest. They're enjoying their independence. They've started their professional career and they've maybe had to reset a bit. That's, I think, very tough. But it continues upwards, doesn't it? There are parents who are juggling homeschooling, leaders who are juggling homeschooling and their jobs. You've got professional couples who are, spending a lot more time together than they had previously. And, right the way up to non-executives. Nobody is free of this, really, are they?
No. I mean, I think there is, yes, that there will be, have had to be shifts in how, in how we do things at the moment. That if you'd said to me, or Hazel, before all of this happened, if we were having a chat and you said, listen, in 3 months' time, you're probably going to be working quite late to be able to juggle some of the things that you need to do in the day, I would say there's no way I'm going to do that. That's just not good for my well-being, not good for myself. But actually, some of these adaptations that we might have to have made are for now. And I think it's important that we remember that they're perhaps for now, and that they're not going to be forever, but that there is a sense that we have to perhaps keep experimenting and trying different things to find out what works for us. And I think this is a really important point, and I hope people listening will take something away from this, which is that we don't know how to do this. There is no blueprint that says, listen, when there's a pandemic, this is how everyone should work from home. Follow this flowchart. If you've got kids, follow this bit here. If you haven't, follow this bit down here. If you're doing, if you're with another, if you've moved back in with your parents, this is the flowchart for you. Like, there is nothing like that. We don't have anything like that. So everyone is having to make this up as they go and find what works for them. And what works for them won't work for someone else. So I think one of the most important things to do right now is to try and find a time to reflect on what's working and what's not working so that you can actively change and shape this day by day. And it's not a sort of a really long exercise where you've got to map it all out, but just scanning through your day to go, okay, which parts of this was good today? Or which parts of this didn't work so well? Is there anything that I could do that will change that so that tomorrow goes a little bit more smoothly? And I think personally, I've found that to be a movable feast. You know, we have to keep reflecting and refining and changing what we're doing in response to everyone's needs within the family tribe and maybe within the organizational tribes as well. So, you know, no one is doing this perfectly. And I don't think there is a perfect. And I think we need to let go of the potential that there is an absolutely perfect way to do, you know, lockdown or to manage in this crisis. There will be hundreds of different ways and they will all work for different people for different reasons. So I guess accompanied with that is the importance of self-compassion. So let's bring it back to the theme of this year, you know, and kindness. It's like actually kindness isn't just about being kind to other people. It's also about finding ways to be kind to yourself, to say, actually, this is good enough in this current crisis. We don't have to go for perfect. We're going to go for good enough for today. And that's okay. And that's how kind act to ourselves. Because otherwise, I think we will risk our functioning being significantly impaired because we just set the bar too high constantly. And I'm normally someone who says, let's set the bar really high and let's work towards, you know, some really big goals. But I also think we have to balance that with the realistic aspect of what's happening in the world right now and what's going to help people to get through this.
Hazel, let me just stop you there for a sec, though, because that point you made just there about, you know, assessing what you did in the day and saying, yeah, OK, that's good enough for today. I think that's probably quite a troublesome concept to get your head around for a lot of people, because if you're an employee of a business, if you are being paid to do a job, if there is a lot of pressure to get something done, you're part of a team and you're having a bad day and everyone is having bad days, that's tough, right? I mean, that's really tough to, you know, I don't think there are many people that ring up their line manager or whoever and say, look, I'm just having a really bad day and it was just good enough what I did today. So, but I'm not saying that means that they should then break themselves. The question is, how do leaders account for that? Like how, as a leader, how can you ensure that you understand when someone's having that sort of a day that they are, and that it's important to let them have that day without feeling like they've got to bury themselves, which is probably what would happen.
Well, I think there's two really important things I want to say about that. One is the scientific literature about compassion to ourselves. So lots of people would think when we say, well, be kind to yourself, it's like letting yourself off the hook so that you can just, you know, have mediocre days all the time and, you know, just not try. Or people have these misconceptions, whereas actually what we know from the literature is that those people who can say, it's good enough for today, I'm being kind to myself, this is very hard, actually there are going to be some days where I just can't do this, will be much more likely to keep working towards difficult goals, will be much more likely to be able to thrive and flourish and, you know, achieve the things that they want to achieve longer term, because they have found a way to be kind to themselves that enables them to keep going and not beat themselves up and not allow that kind of inner critic to take over. So I think there's that element of actually it's more productive sometimes for us to say this is good enough for today and probably bounce back much quicker so that tomorrow is an awesome and rocking day where you manage to get everything on your to-do list done, because that comes with that sense of I've been kind to myself, I've done what I need to do, and now I'm coming back and I'm ready. So I think there's an element of that that's really important, that we understand that sometimes that is giving ourselves what we need. Like, let's go back to sort of physical exercise, right? You cannot run every day flat out sort of sprint training and expect that your body will be okay, right? You have to vary the types of training that you do. And I think it's the same with our mental health, that we sometimes need to give ourselves this time in order to really have a great day of training the next day, right? I think the other thing is, when we as organizations and when leaders allow that space to say we're human, basically that's what we're talking about now, being human, not being robots, being able to say we're going to have a good day one day and we're going to have a bad day the other. And when I think you as a leader allow your teams to do that, you allow them to feel heard and listened to and understood, and some of the crucial aspects of being human that we know enable us to thrive. And I think make it much more likely that your team will function well together. And what you said is, if we, you know, for some people that would feel like kind of burying themselves, it's like that is it. And if you move into that place, I don't think that's, you're going to get the best from the person who experiences it like that and feels like they, you know, a tremendous amount of shame in not being able to do what many people across the world are finding incredibly challenging right now. You know, we didn't learn how to survive a pandemic when we were at school. So, of course, there are going to be days that are hard. And I think we all have to acknowledge that and allow people to have those so that they come bounce back quicker.
So to sort of summarize that, and please check me if I haven't got this right, but, you know, what I'm hearing you saying is this is about communication, like it is in every aspect of life. And that most likely if someone feels that they can share, that's already a massive tick in the box. So leaders need to create that environment where people feel that they can come to them, I guess, be a bit vulnerable and not be judged too harshly. And that if they have that facility, then they will probably actually be on a positive trajectory back out of it much quicker anyway. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's a great summary of what I think is possible when we can create this kind of safe communication, you know, what we might call kind of psychological safety, feeling able to talk about some of those things in a way that is appropriate for your business. It's not about kind of sharing your deepest thoughts and feelings. It's just about being able to, you know, communicate what you need to your leaders and for your leaders to be able to find the space to make that possible too, and to say, I'm ready to listen. What do you need? And how can I help you with this?
Yeah, which is hard when you're not together in an office. You have to make a lot of extra effort to do that remotely.
You do. And also leaders need to remember that they will need to find a space to take care of themselves too. They're not immune to this. They don't have the blueprint either. So there will need to be a space for leaders to be supporting other leaders, or for this to be happening in a way where we need to feel taken care of in order to be able to take care of other people. That's fundamental. So that's why that ripples through the health industry, through a whole different, lots of different sectors, is actually to be able to do your job, you need to feel looked after too. So I think those who are listening that are in that position, think about where that comes from and how you can get that. Because I think that's equally important if you're going to be pouring out a lot to other people and supporting them in this time and giving them, you know, space to not be okay, then you also need to have that space yourself too.
Okay, look, I'm looking at the clock and I can't believe we've got 5 minutes. So I'd like to, we've had some questions come in ahead of this. We've got a few points that come in during the course. I'd like to maybe just throw a few of them at you, because these are, I guess, real world issues that I think link into this, and just get your thoughts and responses, please.
Okay.
So during this period of time, work pipeline has been reduced. It's all homework, perhaps no practical work. You know, we're doing this remotely from each other. How do we keep people motivated who are used to doing their work together and at a high pace, high intensity?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose this comes back to some of the conversation that we've had this morning about a loss of sense of meaning and purpose, and perhaps a lot of that sense of motivation, as you're talking about, comes from doing your role with other people, or as you might be suggesting there, perhaps parts of the job just not being able to happen in the same way right now, which for some people will result in a sort of a lack of a sense of achievement that can start to spiral into feeling very demotivated and finding it hard to find the energy. If I can, I guess one of the things I would suggest is, and not just because it's Kindness Week, but just because I think this is good for us all, some of the really kind of innovative things that I've seen happen. So BT are based in Suffolk. They've got Adastral Park, so a big part of BT work over in Suffolk, and I've been liaising with them during this time to find out what they've been doing. And some of the activities that they've been doing, like making it possible for their employees to come to a space that's safe. And I know this isn't possible for everyone. There might be a different way that you can find this, but they've been using their big kind of exhibition spaces for employees to come in and make protective equipment to go to hospitals and to care homes. And this, I think, is about enabling that sense of meaning and purpose again, and finding how we can connect and give and feel that we're doing something meaningful at this time. So I think that will look very different for all organisations, but one way to keep motivation going might be to pull your employees into a sense of being able to give to others. And we know actually that when we do kind things for other people, it can reduce our levels of stress, help us feel more connected, and all the things that we might want to be sort of prescribing, as it were, to improve our well-being, we might get from engaging in tasks that feel like we're doing something meaningful.
Yeah, which leads to motivation and you know, pulls you out of that perhaps lethargy. Okay, and another really interesting question is around, I guess, transparency or presence. So this question is about, in a normal office environment, you know, if there is a pressing matter that leadership team are dealing with, you know, people would by osmosis understand that you know, perhaps management are working on something intense, whether it's good or bad, but they would pick it up through the air, through the electricity. Doing that remotely, you may just get this sense of a lack of presence, a lack of engagement, which could have really the opposite effect. So how do leaders, businesses, teams safeguard against that?
I think it comes back to that level of authenticity and being available. Now, I'm not saying you've got to be available all the time, but I do think that you're right. Things will get lost now because of how we might operate in an office that you're not seeing when people are working remotely. So we have to perhaps put more effort into communicating with the team. And that may be as being honest about the fact that there's some things that they're working on right now, they're not going to be as available as they might be. But this person is going to be, you know, available instead, or these are the times that I'm going to be here so that you can still check in with me. Equally, I think, you know, one of the things that we've not touched on a great deal today, but that is important, is about actually positive emotion and us finding space in our day to experience some sense of awe or joy or gratitude as a way of building our well-being. And I know that there are lots of organisations that are trying to build in some sense of fun into their communication, which might seem a bit counterintuitive right now, like we don't have time for fun, we're in a crisis, but actually that can be very helpful for us as well. So I know that there's one business that every Friday for 20 minutes, they all hop on a Zoom call and they have like a quiz, or they do something that's lighthearted, or they do charades, and the leaders try and make sure that they're there too. And I think this is important because your presence isn't just about that kind of leadership bit, but also making the team feel that you're still a part of them. So it may be, maybe it's not that, but maybe there are opportunities within the week to just feel, let the team know. It's like if you have to go to another party, but you want to pop into the party you were invited to, you know, it's like you just kind of got to show your face. You got to say, I've come for a little bit, and then I now need to go and work on that other thing I'm working on, but I do still want you to know I'm holding you all in mind and I'm popping in. So I think there's a way, whatever that virtual way of popping into the party is, I think that's really important for leaders right now to help their teams feel that they're still there.
Wow, you just made me realise I've completely forgotten what a party is. It's just something else. Wow.
I know.
Okay,
look. Parties come back.
Just ended on a downer. No, look, Hazel. Look, that's time. Incredibly, that's time. I know we have barely scratched the surface of so many things that you and I have talked about, and I had a pile of questions that I wanted to get to you, which I just simply haven't done, and people have been very generous with those. So, you know, firstly, apologies. I'm going to ask you to summarise a few key takeaways, if that's okay, and then I'm going to provide a way, hopefully, for people to get those questions to you or us. So could you maybe just quickly give us some key takeaways from what we've discussed?
Sure. Okay. So I think because it's Mental Health Awareness Weekend, the theme is kindness. Let's start there by thinking about actually kindness and small acts of kindness can create tremendous ripples in organisations. And there's a lot of science to show that we can kind of ripple positive emotion through organisations too. So I guess one takeaway is just to think about the ways in which we can be kind at the moment, whatever that might look like, so that we can improve positive emotion, which we know improves our well-being. Coupled with that, I guess it's the aspect that we've talked about today of self-kindness and compassion, and actually the ways that we can take care of ourselves right now so that we can be the best leaders that we can be for other people too.
Okay. All right. That's fantastic. So look, I'm going to say thank you again for taking the time to do this. I know we're going to continue these discussions. Hazel, how can, apart from the contact details on the screen, which have been there this time, which I guess is how people get hold of you, how would you encourage people to reach out to you if they want to pick this up with you directly for their businesses or their teams or themselves?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I'm human too. I love being connected to other people. So please do connect with me, because that makes me feel like I'm, you know, not isolated too. And I'm very happy to sort of share some more research and ideas with anyone who might be wanting to use this as a starting place to start, you know, thinking a bit more about how they build sort of positive mental health and well-being in their organisation. So do, yes. Or if you've got any questions that you want to ask me about what we've talked about today or anything, then get in touch.
Brilliant. And if you didn't get those details down, they'll be on the recording. I'm going to put a load of links to various things that we've kind of touched on but maybe didn't explicitly name, because I think they're really good. Some extra reading. I know a lot of people that I work with love reading various things. I'll add those links in as well. But I guess that's it. That's time. I think my coffee cup has run out.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Coffee First. Please don't forget to hit the subscribe button, follow our Twitter account, CoffeeFirst13, and follow the Amrock UK LinkedIn page for all our company updates. We look forward to inviting you back on the next episode of Coffee First.